Turn in your Bibles to Exodus. Exodus chapter 12. We didn't quite finish last time, so let's wrap up that chapter and then get to chapter 13 and possibly even 14. Remember, the point of Exodus, especially so the Exodus part of Exodus, the 10 plagues on Egypt and then the going out of, exiting Egypt, which is right where we are. The point of it all is so that all may know that Yahweh is the true omnipotent God. The Egyptians should know, Pharaoh should know, Moses should know, Aaron should know, the Israelites should know, everybody should know. The nations should know. You and I need to know who the Lord is. And as we've gone through the plagues, the 10 plagues on Egypt, we have seen exactly that being accomplished. Everybody is starting to realize who the true God really is. And then we had the 10th plague, the death of the firstborn. All the plagues happened. The Lord said so, and it happened as he said. They're getting to know God. We were introduced to the Passover celebrations and the Feast of Unleavened Bread that would follow it, all because of the circumstances surrounding the Exodus events. The leaving in the haste, bread didn't have time to rise, things like that. So it's a very visual, both the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread would become this eternal memorial for them if they actually just kept it, which sadly they haven't as the years go by. But we don't know that yet because we're only in Exodus chapter 12. We ended last time in verse 42 that at the end of 430 years in Egypt, since the time of Joseph, when God delivered the nation of Jacob, of Israel, from famine by bringing them to Egypt, now he's delivering them out of Egypt because they've become slaves in Egypt. And God's going to now make them his own slaves, slaves of a perfect master, and bring them to a land that he's just freely going to give them. So everything is going to be the opposite of Egypt. Perfect master instead of Pharaoh. A land of their own instead of just a portion of the land of Egypt. Slavery and perfect conditions to a righteous God instead of slavery and oppressive conditions in Egypt. And then we pick up in verse 43, where the Passover is explained in more details, both for the immediate Passover that they just experienced, but then also for the celebration of it now in the years ahead. Verse 43, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is still on the day of the Exodus, right, when they left in haste with all the riches of Egypt. The Lord said, Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, this is the statute of the Passover. No foreigner shall eat of it. Now, that's a striking term. You can only have a foreigner if you have a citizen. They are officially now citizens of God's kingdom. No longer the foreigners in Egypt. Now they are talking about foreigners as being those other people. Okay, dramatic term here. No foreigner shall eat of it, but every slave that is bought for money may eat of it after you have circumcised them. Linked to the Abrahamic covenant. Those who understand that now you're in God's kingdom, getting God's blessings based on God's promise. Verse 45, no foreigner or hired servant may eat of it. It shall be eaten in one house. You shall not take any of the flesh outside the house, and you shall not break any of its bones. A little reference there that's going to become significant when the crucifixion of Jesus gets sped up by breaking bones, and yet Jesus had already given up his life as the Passover lamb. And so it explicitly quotes, the New Testament quotes this and says, not a bone shall be broken. It's mentioned in the Psalms as well. Verse 47, all the congregation of Israel shall keep it. If a stranger shall sojourn with you and would keep the Passover to Yahweh, let all his males be circumcised. Then he may come near and keep it. He shall be as a native of the land, but no uncircumcised person shall eat of it. There shall be one law for the native and for the stranger who sojourns among you. Great focus here on Israel, all of you keep it, nobody else keep it. If you want to keep it, because you believe God, that Yahweh, the God of Israel, then submit to the sign of the Abrahamic covenant, circumcision, and then you may eat of it. After being so clear, no foreigner, no hired hand, no slave even that you purchase unless he's circumcised, only those circumcised, and all those circumcised, all those of Israel shall keep it. After making a distinction, he says, keep in mind, the law of this new king is the same for everyone. The distinction is made between those who believe God and his promises and those who do not, those who reject it, won't submit. But he says the law is the same for everyone. And so in a sense, Israel gets no special treatment because they're Israel. They're just set apart from unbelievers. And so the law is the same for everyone. Doesn't matter if you're a stranger or a native in the land, if you're circumcised, you should partake. If you're not, you should not. If you believe in the God of Abraham, you should participate in the Passover. Otherwise, you may not. It doesn't matter who you are. So immediately you see, though the identity of Israel is going to be significant, you are not okay just because you are a seed of Abraham. You're only okay whether it's a descendant of Abraham or not if you submit to the Abrahamic covenant and believe what God has promised. Talks about the land here as well. Just a reminder that they're going to the promised land. They're not in their own land yet. Get the picture of Christ, obviously, or the pointing back from Christ to the Passover lamb and even the details. And so, in this statement about the foreigners not participating, you have this comment on the nature of the lamb, and immediately you get the same picture that you can see in New Testament regarding salvation. You're saved because of the Passover lamb, and he had to meet certain criteria, and that's why you're saved through him, and that's what matters. Faith in the God of Abraham through the Passover lamb makes you accepted, and you can participate. Verse 50, all the people of Israel did just as Yahweh commanded Moses and Aaron, and on that very day Yahweh brought the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their hosts. And this wraps up then the day of the Exodus. Not everything is chronological. You've got some law and things like that given in between. But the Exodus had taken place, and this wrapped it all up. All because of the Passover. Now, there's going to be some more laws given in just a moment, and you can see some of the travels in just a moment. But keep in mind the main point up to now, the theme of it all is, so that all may know that I am the Lord. And we'll see some more of it still. But now we have another big theme brought in. Verse 51, on that very day, Yahweh brought the people of Israel out. That's where the book gets its name. The Exodus. The going out of Egypt. By their host. By their host, just reminds you, this is a victorious moment. The Exodus was with the wealth of Egypt in great haste, urged by the Egyptians to leave. Like, this is the biggest victory ever. And so by their host, by their armies, by their vast amount of capable men. Chapter 13 then. Yahweh said to Moses, some more law given here, consecrate to me all the firstborn. Whatever is the first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine. Then Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of slavery, for by a strong hand of Yahweh brought you out from this place. You see that repeated new theme here. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Abib, you are going out. And when Yahweh brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to Yahweh. Excuse me. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen with you, and no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory. You shall tell your son on that day, it is because of what Yahweh did for me when I came out of Egypt. And it shall be to you a sign on your hand, and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Yahweh may be in your mouth, for with a strong hand the Yahweh has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this statute at its appointed time from year to year." So you see the new theme, very, very profound. Verse 3, twice the Lord brought you out. Verse 4 again, you are going out. And then verse 5, you're going into. So this Exodus isn't just for the Exodus effect. It is for the purpose of bringing you into the place of Abrahamic promise and blessing. You see, though, first, before that, just this consecration of the firstborn. It just takes those first two verses there. And the point is this. You have been taken out. You have been redeemed, to use a theological term that's going to be very prominent later. You have been redeemed, which means you are owned. You were in slavery. You were owned by Pharaoh and oppression. You're not free to do as you want. No man is ever a free creature in that sense. You are a slave of Pharaoh. Now you're owned by Yahweh. And so the slavery concept hasn't really been removed. But you're no longer a slave in Egypt. You are now consecrated to Yahweh. The big change is not slavery to freedom. It is from Egypt oppression to perfection. To glory, to context where you can live and thrive. And then you've got these instructions that are appropriate now. If you're owned by another, they can tell you what to do. And so God tells them what to do. And what he tells them to do is simply never, ever, 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 ever forget that Yahweh brought you out. Your kid is going to ask you, why do we do this? Like unleavened bread, it's kind of flat bread, okay? Why are we doing this? Well, you know, my son, it's because Yahweh brought us out. And if we didn't have this reminder, we'd probably forget that. You see that because of Yahweh that brought us out, verse 8, verse 9, for with a strong hand Yahweh brought you out of Egypt. Therefore you will keep this at its appointed time. God had, remember, defined the beginning of their year as this month, Abib, or Nisan as it's called later. And so he says, your year is going to begin, every year is going to begin with celebrating the Passover and celebrating the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So that every year, your New Year resolution is not going to be, I will obey. Your New Year resolution is simply going to be, we belong to Yahweh, and it's because He rescued us from Egypt. So it's quite a profound statement here. In the midst of the Exodus excitement, we get these interjections with law, but it matches the excitement of the people leaving, saying, this is the best thing that ever happened to us. Cannot believe how utterly destroyed Egypt is. And you would not believe how valiantly we came out of Egypt as a bunch of slaves. Verse 11. When Yahweh brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and shall give it to you, strong anchor to the Abrahamic covenant there, you shall set apart to Yahweh all the first. All that first opens the womb. All the firstborn of your animals that are males shall be Yahweh's. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. Or if you will not redeem it, you shall break its neck. Every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. And when in time to come your son asks you, what does this mean? You shall say to him, by a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt, from the house of slavery. For when Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, Yahweh killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. Therefore I sacrifice to Yahweh all the males that first opened the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a mark on your hand or frontlet between your eyes, for by a strong hand Yahweh brought us out of Egypt. You see this new theme, don't you? Very pronounced again. This is clarification on the consecration of the firstborn. And the simple line of reasoning is, God took all the firstborn of Egypt to bring us out. But the firstborn, firstborn of man and beast. And so the firstborn of man and beast in our nation belongs to Yahweh. Now a beast is easy. You can sacrifice that to the Lord. Okay, so you have a new effort that coughed for the first time, and that first bull cough, you bring a sacrifice to the Lord. That's easy. You don't sacrifice donkeys. So there's this quick little aside. Just for a donkey, don't sacrifice the first donkey. That's not acceptable. You can replace the first donkey male colt, if that's the right word, with a sheep. Okay, so you replace it with another animal. Also, Yahweh does not require of you, expect of you to kill your firstborn son. If in the Exodus your son was redeemed by the blood of a substitute, certainly in the continuation of this, the firstborn that belongs to God can be redeemed by a substitute. And so your son you will redeem, you will sacrifice a lamb instead of your son. And so there's no fear that the God who can kill nationwide all the firstborn, take them for themselves as a form of judgment, there's no fear that you are ever going to experience that kind of judgment from this God. You are going to experience redemption instead, like you did that first time. Remember, you killed the lamb, you put the blood on the doorpost, you were passed over as the angel of death came. And so, imagine this. Every single family, whoever has male sons, will, at the birth of the first son, have the striking reminder, wait, there's an extra sacrifice due because this son belongs to God and he can take him by death and judgment, or he can redeem him with a substitute. So let's go sacrifice the substitute. So son, you realize you belong to God. And just because he didn't take you in sacrifice form, that is no less mean than not his. So the ownership of Israel by Yahweh is profound. Now that ownership is going to produce, as we get to chapter 16 and following, amazing provision, as we've kind of seen already a little bit. But for now, it's the issue of ownership. You are never a free agent, obviously, as a human being, right? You're created. And so you belong to the Lord or you belong to a Christian. Very significant in verse 13 with the donkey issue. Again, the odd law is always the one that helps you make sense of it all. You either die or you get redeemed. Just because a donkey cannot be sacrificed doesn't mean you skip the donkey. You kill the donkey if you won't redeem it with a sheep. You don't get the donkey either. It's God's. You don't get to keep what is God's. So there's destruction or there is redemption. Same as the Passover, right? There's destruction in Egypt or there's redemption in Israel. Then finally we get back to the Exodus story, right? It was exciting. They left with all the riches and everything at the end of chapter 12, just before where we started up again. So let's get back to that story. Verse 17, when Pharaoh let the people go, and you kind of have to take a moment just to say, that's such a cool phrase. It's literally the thing that never happened, and now it happened. When Pharaoh let the people go, could you believe it? It actually happened. God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt, equipped for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with them, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. And they moved on from Succoth, and they camped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. And Yahweh went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way. And by night, in a pillar of fire, to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. Sorry, the script has to mark something. This paragraph is about God's leading of the people whom he redeemed. It starts and ends that way. Verse 17, God did not lead them one route. Verse 21, he actually led them with these two pillars. The pillar that would change in the day and in the night to provide different benefits. So that they could just keep traveling, just keep going. I'll with you. You've got everything you need. He leads them not in a way, and he leads them in a way. He leads them not in the way of the Philistines. Now, this was literally the highway between Egypt and Canaan. It's a massive trade route. It's easy, much easier to move a couple million people. That's it. It was about 2.5-3 million people. With all the cattle and everything, remember, that they took along from their own, and even some from the Egyptians that survived the plagues, and weren't affected by the plagues. It's this major road that they can travel along. There are official petrol stops and things like that to feed your cattle and water them. And God specifically says, I'm not going to lead you that way because you're going to be tempted with fear. Because the Philistines are a very war, military-oriented people group. And I'm not going to lead you by that way because you might become fearful of them and say, actually, you know, let's just turn around. This road is nice. We know how it goes. Let's go back to Egypt. Keep that in mind, because God is keeping them from the legitimate fear that will make them want to undo the exodus. So God is aware of their weakness, and he leads them another route. Now, the other route is going to have its own issues, but at least what they will know on the other route is the fact that we're surviving on this route means Yahweh is with us. And the very next statement is he leads them in this most visual, beneficial way possible. There's no way Mr. and Mrs. Israelite, with their Israelite children, can travel out of Egypt and wonder if Yahweh is with them or not. If we went the normal route, you might wonder, okay, where is he? It's a nice road, it's literally made for travel, we're being taken care of in ordinary ways. The other route isn't even a route. You're just going into the desert. But there's this amazing pillar of cloud guiding you in the day and pillar of fire at night. And then God seems to have enabled them through that cloud to travel nonstop. That's a little miracle on its own if you've got little kids and a mega herd behind you. Half the animals aren't even yours. Okay, they were just given to you to help you get out of the land. So you're still sorting that out. And God makes that you guys can just keep traveling. We'll take care of things. Don't forget this. This is not just random detail. It's just like the plague showed how ridiculous it was that Pharaoh would not soften his heart. So this, the way the Exodus happens, is going to give you the utter confidence that these people will never stray from God. Unfortunately, you know how the story goes. And even in the very next events, verse 14, chapter 14. Then Yahweh said to Moses, tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal-Zephon. You shall camp facing it by the sea. Talk about detailed leadership. Okay? They're not wondering how God wants them to travel. He's spelling it out. Like, between this point and that point, I want you to face that way. Everything is just perfect. I'm taking care of it all. 4, verse 3, Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahweh. And they did so. Okay, they're listening, they're obeying. This is amazing. Everything spelled out, literally spelled out for them. And then God still says, Pharaoh is going to say, I'm going to shut them in. So we're back to that theme, but in the opposite. Okay, they went out. Pharaoh's going to be like, ha ha, they went out only to get shut in. And then verse 4, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Okay, why is the Lord still hardening Pharaoh's heart? He kind of made his point. He made his point, yes. But the conclusion of the book, the story has not yet been written. The tenth plague was the last point made. It was not the conclusion of the story. As he says here, Pharaoh will pursue them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh. This is going to be the final verdict. Oh, they know that Yahweh is Lord by now. But we're going to do one more grand event, and that's going to put an end to this stage of Egypt. After this, I get glory. They don't. I will get glory over Egypt, over Pharaoh and all his host, and the Egyptians then shall know. They are finally going to stand back and say, Yahweh is with them. We're done for. That verdict hasn't taken place yet. You haven't seen Pharaoh say anything like that after the tenth plague yet. So it's going to happen. Verse 5. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed towards the people. So God's plan is working now. God's prediction. And they said, what is this that we have done? That we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made ready his chariots and took his army with him. He took 600 chosen chariots. And all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And Yahweh hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. Don't you like that? Defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamped at the sea by Pehahiroth in front of Baal-Zephon, exactly where God led them to. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to Yahweh. They said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. God had led them to precisely this place, between these two locations, because if they went the other route, they would fear the warmongering Philistines, and they'll say, let's go back to Egypt. Now, he leads them to a place of safety. They see the Egyptian army coming in, and they fear greatly, same weakness, for the same reason, military defeat. And they say, you know, we're not longing to go back to Egypt, but we're going to bring that up. We are just wondering, why on earth did you take us out of Egypt if we're just going to die here? Were there not enough graves in Egypt? We knew there were. We got killed all the day because of the slavery. We know there are graves in Egypt. Were there not enough there that you brought us out here? They feared greatly. They went out defiantly. Didn't you see that? Even that little adverb just thrown in there to remind you of how they left. Instantly, the very fear that God was overtly protecting them from. They had no reason to fear. On the great highway? Yes, humanly speaking, they would look at it, they'd forget God was with them, and they would fear. Yeah, there's no reason for fear. Yes, it's terrifying, but there's a pillar of fire. Okay, we're exactly where God said. We know we are in the will of God. Literally, our location, our GPS coordinates are in the revealed will of God. And they said, it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians. It would be, we're shut in, as Pharaoh said, and it would be better if we never came out. Utter ridiculous conclusion. Understandable, right? It's not hard to relate to them. But it really defies all evidences. And Moses said to the people, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of Yahweh, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. Yahweh will fight for you, and you have only to be silent. Yahweh said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts, his chariot and his horsemen, and the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahweh when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." Isn't it great if you link this back to the plan that was revealed just before it all happened? It's like, oh wait, God's plan is working. All that's happening here this day is nothing terrifying. All that is happening is God's final statement against Egypt is unfolding exactly like he said. He told them up front, this is what I'm going to do. He did it. They feared, which makes no sense because he told them it's going to happen. He told them how it's going to end. I'm going to get glory. And so God, in his great grace to them, doesn't even address their fear. He just tells Moses, go instill some courage in them. Okay, when we are weak, God doesn't destroy us or discipline us. He builds us up, right? He gives us instruction. We saw that in Proverbs, right? Gives them instruction. And instruction is very simple. Don't fear. Let's first just deal with sin quickly. Don't fear. Okay, cool. Don't fear. Okay? It's an old order. Stand firm. All right? We're not moving in haste this time. We left Egypt in haste. Now we're just standing. Just don't move. Okay? Don't be afraid. Stand up. Just stay where you are. Stand firm. And see the salvation of Yahweh, which he will work for you today. Here's the instruction. Big army coming. Their chariot division is as big as all of us together. So here's the rules. Don't be afraid. Just find a spot and stay there. And look. Now, if looks could kill, this would help. But looking doesn't exactly win wars. See the salvation of Yahweh, which he will work for you today. The only worker here, the only person actively doing something, is going to be the cloud person, okay? Yahweh, who's standing between you and them with his mega cloud. And here's the outcome of the war, just so you guys know. I know I say don't fear, but it's terrifying. I know stand still, but you want to do something. I know I say look, and you're like, look, don't actually help a lot. So here's the end of the story. The Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see again. You're not going back to slavery, where you're going to see them every day for the rest of your life. You're never going to see these people again. Look now, it's the last time you're going to get to see them. The Lord, Yahweh, will fight for you, and you have only to be silent. Stop crying out these ridiculous statements of verses 11 and 12. Oh, not enough graves in Egypt, Moses thought. That's why. Don't say things. Just shut up. Just keep quiet. The next phrase, I'm totally using this counseling phrase next time. Yahweh said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people to go forward." What a statement is that? He told him to be quiet. Stop praying to me for deliverance when you know the answer to the prayer. Okay, crying out to God is an extreme form of praying under distress and duress, right? Stop praying when you're in trouble, when you know what the answer is. Just go do the next thing, okay? I told you, GPS coordinates, make sure everybody move forward, get into that. It's a great, great, direct word of counsel here. It's strong because of the rebellion, but still gracious. He says, stop praying, stop crying out to me. Here's the answer. Just do it. Look, see, okay? Look at all those faces, you're never going to see them again. That's all you need to do, just keep silent. Verse 17, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians. God says, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart so that he comes after me so I can have this one big demonstration that I am God and they're finally going to realize it. But I'm going to go a step further. And when everybody comes, I'm going to harden them to follow you more, but know for a fact that if they keep following you, it's because I'm hardening their hearts and they'll do something incredibly stupid, unbelieving, destructive. And that is how I will get glory over them. I'm going to be an active participant in leading them to a final end. And the Egyptians, verse 18, shall know that I am Yahweh when I've gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. So we're all still tied to the same theme. God has not changed in all the 10 plagues. Still the same God, accomplishing the same goal, and finally, that goal is going to be accomplished. Then, verse 19, the angel of God who was going before the host of Israel moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness. That's a change. We thought it was a cloud of fire, but it's darkness. And it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. It seems like the army approached as the sun was setting. And there's a pillar of cloud before them in the day leading them. It moves to behind them. Switches over possibly then to the pillar of fire, because it's darkness now. And the whole night long, the masterful Egyptian army, who was a world power, incredibly victorious, spent the whole night, their advantage, not able to attack, losing their advantage. They couldn't come near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and Yahweh drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. It's amazing. Picture this. They're encamped, they're shut in, sea on one side, there's an army on the other side. God is between them and the army, so that's taken care of all night. But while they're waiting to see what the morning will bring, God is in the meantime blowing a strong east wind from across the Red Sea and creating some dry land in the middle. So it seems like ordinary means, but it's a miracle because the wind doesn't normally do that. And so the waters were divided. Verse 22, the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right and on their left. The water that was so terrifying went away so that they could go into the middle of the terrifying place on dry land, and the terrifying water became a defense mechanism on both sides to them. You have to understand the strategic military prowess of Yahweh here. Verse 23, the Egyptians pursued, went in after them into the midst of the sea. Somebody should have said, this looks dodgy. Never seen this in war before. What do we do? But God hardened their hearts, so they just all went in. All Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, Yahweh in the pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from before Israel, for Yahweh fights for them against the Egyptians. Oh, this is great. This powerful Pharaoh comes to battle Yahweh, and it says, Yahweh kind of looked down to see what's going on. They miss that visual perspective. He's looking down on his apparently powerful soldiers. He threw them into a panic. Okay, they didn't fail to reach the Israelites because of ordinary means. They were just chaotic. You somewhat understand it. Like some of the generals are like, we don't know what to do with this in war. We've won many wars. This is new. What do we do? Do they stay? Looks dangerous. It's working for them. There's chaos. And then he says, clogging their chariot wheels. I've got the picture in my mind of little boys throwing clay at the chariot wheels from the side and seeing how much slower and slower and slower they go till they stop. Okay? They're clogging their chariot wheels, so they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from before, not let us stop pursuing, let us flee from before Israel, for Yahweh fights for them against the Egyptians. God got glory, didn't he? Well, that's not even the best statement yet. Verse 26, then Yahweh said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon the chariots, and upon their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, Yahweh threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. They went in so fast it looked like God was throwing them in from the side. The waters returned, covered the chariots and horsemen of all those of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Thus Yahweh saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Moses had said, don't fear them, have a look. You'll never see them again. Well, they saw them one more time as part of this battle, but they were all dead, washing up on the seashore. Verse 31, Israel saw the great power that Yahweh used against the Egyptians, so the people feared Yahweh, and they believed in Yahweh, and they believed in his servant Moses. Such a cool phrase. So much going on there. They saw his power. And this becomes the story of God's power until the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's the only story of God's power that trumps this one. Throughout the Old Testament, all the nations know Israel is the land, his God is Yahweh, and by great power he delivered them from the Egyptians. They feared Yahweh, that is a statement of faith. Fear of the Lord is kind of your Old Testament way of saying they believed in complete faith in God. Next is, and they believed in the Lord, explicitly stated there, and they believed in his servant Moses. Three things mentioned here, three theological things took place. There was deliverance by God's power. Then there was faith, they feared and believed. And then they submitted and believed God's revelation. Moses was just a servant of God, the prophet, giving them his word. Remember, this whole day started with Moses telling the people how God is going to work. Then when it started working, the people got scared. And then when it kept working, reached this end, they realized God was right. So now they look at it and say, huh, don't fear next time. Okay, we got this one. If God says through Moses this is going to happen, we can believe it with everything. With Moses as God's spokesman, you can put all your eggs in the same basket. There's no reason ever to disbelieve Moses when he speaks for Yahweh, because he's a true prophet. And so if Moses says it, we believe him because we believe God, because we've come to fear God. This is going to result... So deliverance produces faith, results in faith, results in acceptance of God's revelation. That's going to produce exaltation, worship. Then Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to Yahweh, saying, I will sing to Yahweh. And we're going to have to look at that next time. What has happened here? Exodus took place. We saw that last time. Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread is explained a little more so that you see how just God's law is and how it's... And his acceptance of them is defined by his deliverance of them and their belief in his promises. Then this whole story takes place. God keeps them from the fear of the Philistines, brings them another place, and all kind of takes place simply for them to realize, if we believe God's promises, he will deliver us. And we will believe, and he will tell us what to do. And we will live. And that's perhaps the shortest summary, my own words here, of the entire Mosaic law. He will tell us how to live. And we'll see that as we get to the law sections. But first, remember that they went out, big theme. They were not shut in, as Pharaoh thought. They're not going back either. And everyone will know that Yahweh is God. And God finally got all the glory. Because as the Egyptian army was being destroyed, they were crying out to one another, let us flee, for Yahweh is fighting for us. for them against us. And so ends Egypt. For now. They'll get another pharaoh eventually. They'll slowly recover. But this will be the biggest defeat of Egypt ever. So much so that they haven't even recorded it. So embarrassing. And they're otherwise very detailed history. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, to this very day, this story stands as the day you were glorified over Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen because of this one nightly event where you both placed yourself between your people and destruction, where you on the other side were preparing a way of deliverance and brought them through safely, and the very act of delivering them became the act of destroying those who hated you so and would not believe even after the 10 plagues. Father, thank you that we can know about this. Thank you that we can know that you are God and there is no other. You have redeemed us from enslavement to our futile way of thinking. You've redeemed us from enslavement and the desires of the flesh. You've redeemed us from just the irrational unbelief that characterized the Egyptians that day. And you've called us to yourself. You've made us your own. You've bought us with a price. And so help us to glorify you in all that we do, because we know who you are. We know your goodness and grace and power. We know you're using all of your perfections for our good. You've given us your revelation. Help us to accept it, believe it, and do everything written in it, so that we too may live. We praise you in the name of Jesus Christ, our Passover Lamb.